Mr. Henry Van Emden, Reel 5. We're talking about Benny Simpkins. You were telling us what he was like as a bloke and as a saxophone.
He was a very, very nice bloke, very understanding, very unassuming. He was a brilliant musician, one of the most brilliant musicians I've ever had the pleasure of knowing as a friend. And he played in a section, and another chap called Ray Sayers was on lead alto. Ray, unfortunately, Benny had a stroke and died some years ago, but Ray Sayers is still alive, and I'm still in touch with him. He's very ill because he's been bad, a lot of strokes, but he's still managing to carry on, and he lives in Gillingham, so we keep in touch by phone more than anything else these days. Since I lost my sight, I can't go down to see him.
Now, what happened? So, you were playing with the Guards Armour Division Dance Orchestra.
Yeah.
And then what happened after you were posted? I mean, did it...
No, what happened before then? What happened before then? Very shortly, it had been formed in beginning of... in early May. And it carried on until, I don't know, about September, I think. And then a big demob came along, demob number 46. And I lost the whole damn lot because they were all older than me. They were all about 5 years older than me, 4 years older than me. And in one go, I lost the whole damn lot.
So you were back to a small band.
I was back to a small band. I couldn't face the idea of trying to form another big band again. So I got a small band, and I started doing broadcasting regularly at Hamburg.
And what did you call that band? I should have asked that.
Van Emden and his music.
Sorry?
Van Emden and his music.
Right. So it was under your own personal name.
Yeah.
Now, so what happened when you got to Berlin then? Go back to that.
When I got to Berlin, I've never seen destruction and shambles in my whole life like the way that place was. It was in I got back to that place in 1946. I got to Berlin in 1946. It was complete and utter shambles. So there was one building standing, which was in Kurfürstendamm, was Reichskanzlerplatz, was the NAFI, which had been rebuilt so that the men and women had somewhere to go of an evening when they were off duty. So we had, so I went there one evening to have a cup of tea and a cake, and I saw a piano on the stand, one man playing it, and about 10 men queuing up behind, and a terrible pianist. So I said to one of the people having tea, I said, "What's all those men doing? They're going to sing." "Oh no, they're all pianists. They're all there 5 minutes each. And each one was worse than the next one." So after about a quarter of an hour, I couldn't stand anymore, and I left. So I went to see the colonel in charge of the whole area. Told him what I wanted to try and do, try and form a band to get some entertainment going, because there was such a hell of a lot of drinking and VD in the area that I wanted to try and get some people interested in something else. So he thought it was a wonderful idea, gave me a list of all the units in the area, their addresses, and a car. "Now go and see what you can do." And I didn't have any luck at all at first. And all of a sudden, a man said to me, he said, "There is a good pianist. He lives at so-and-so. Go and have a look." So I went to saw this pianist, and I said, "I want to ask you a personal question. How well do you actually play?" He said, "I'm a top-class professional musician." I said, "That's all I want to know. Would you like to join me?" He said, "Oh, wouldn't mind. Do you know anybody else in that calibre?" "Oh, yes, a friend of mine down the road plays bass. He's very good." I went there. He said, "Yes, I'll join you." He knows a drummer down the road, and he knew a guitarist. So before I could look round, I'd got a four-piece rhythm section. So we called a rehearsal, and within about 2 minutes, I realised I'd got a fantastic band, little rhythm section, fantastic. So I looked further, and I managed to get a girl vocalist and a man. And we started doing dances at Naffy and local places.
Now, did this have a name, the band?
My name.
Just your name, it's a Van Emden Dance Band.
So There was nothing there, as I say, so I thought, we've got to try and do better than this, 200 or 300 people at a time. And the only broadcasting station in the whole area was the American Forces Network. So I went to see, I got an appointment to see the head man, and I said, I'd like to do some broadcasting on your station. So I said, that's a good idea, English point of view, what do you want to talk about? I don't want to talk about anything, I've got a band. A band? Gee, a limey's got a band. He wants to broadcast on our station. I said, well, he said, look at the bands we've got, all the big American bands. I said, yeah, but they're all on records, aren't they? I'm playing live. Give us a chance. All right, come along tomorrow afternoon, you can have an audition. And when I got the band rehearsed in the morning, went there in the afternoon, and a big studio, about 20 times the size of this room, full up with Americans who want to hear this limey band. They think they're going to broadcast. I thought, this is going to be good. So I played the first number, and I'm on clarinet. Played the first number. He said, you didn't tell me you played like that. You got your own broadcasting every Thursday night. You're on your own program every Thursday night, 9:15. So, thank you. So, the first night I got there a bit early, and the band was playing, I could hear the records. I said to the producer, I said, that's Benny Goodman's band. He said, that's right, it comes from Hollywood every Thursday night until 9:00. 9:00? After you've got the news headlines, I'm coming on live and I'm playing clarinet. What are you trying to do to me? Don't worry, we've heard you play, you've got nothing to worry about, and you've got an advantage over him. Wonderful. I've got an advantage over Benny Goodman. So we did the first broadcast, and he said, this is a live band in the studio from London, new band, and if you've got any special songs you'd like the band to play, because going out to America, then I'm sure the gang will be able to play them for you, and they'll be only too pleased to do so. Just write in. And the letters flooded in. Stuff like, you'll never know how much I love you, long ago and far away, all that sort of thing. I could play them on my head. And the program got very popular, and I did that right until I got demobbed. The producer of the show was demobbed about 3 months before I was finished. He said he's going to America going to CBS, because he had got connections there as well, and he's going to have a look around, and if I want to take a band, go over there, form a band over there, and carry on when I got demobbed, come and get in touch with him, and we'll go from there. And I was going to do it. And it was a good advantage, good to do, because I was known over there through the broadcasts. I thought, I can do this. And believe it or not, I went to a vocalist. And the vocalist I was going to try and get to go with me once I got started over there, you might not believe, was Frank Sinatra. 1947. In 1947, Frank was in the doldrums. He was connected with the mafia, they thought. And the studios dropped him, the film people dropped him, he couldn't do records, he couldn't get anything. He went to see Artie Shaw to try and get a job from him. And Artie Shaw said, I'm so sorry, I'll use girl vocalists, I can't use you. And try. If I'd been on the spot at the time, trying to get myself organised, I might have had to change his name for a little bit, but I think it could have worked, and didn't. But I never did go to America.
Now, so you were just broadcasting on the American Forces Broadcast Network every Thursday.
Right.
And what else were you doing in Berlin? Or were you just, what sort of duties? Or was it just...
I didn't have many duties to do there, because there wasn't an awful lot in Berlin to do. And I was rehearsing the band during the day. And when the authorities knew about it, they were quite happy to let me do that.
How did you get on with the Germans, the civilians?
Not a lot of problems. They were as nice as could possibly be, because they were worried about what was going to happen to them. I had a similar sort of thing when we went to a village called Belsen, and the car broke down. It was a spring broke at the bottom of the car. The rope was so bad. So we had to send to Remy to get a new spring. And while that was going to take about 3 hours, we had nothing else. And they could see the curtains fluttering in the houses. We all getting very worried. Soldiers here, what they're going to do to us. And we had a look around. Lovely May Day. and there was a wood, and we walked in this wood, and I didn't like the atmosphere. It was oppressive. Gorgeous day, no birds singing, nothing. And I felt a bit caged in. I turned to my companion and said, come on, let's get out of here, I don't like this. So we did, and eventually they came along, fixed the car, and we drove about half a mile outside the... No wonder it was like that. We went about half a mile outside the village, and there was Belson Camp. And I could see the mounds at the back, and I could see the huts. And I stood at that gate for about 5 minutes, but I couldn't go in. I couldn't bring myself to go in. I could just walk in, because it had been cleared a week before. I could have just walked in.
This is in May.
And I couldn't do it. I just stood there in silence, and I said to a driver, come on, let's go. And we left. Couldn't do it.
Now, what about the black market? Were you aware much of the black market? Or did you get involved at all?
I bought a couple of things. I bought a radio, which could get any station in the world, more or less. I took that home to my parents. I've got a length of dress material for a girl I was going out with by this time, a girlfriend. I've got a length of material. I had a suit made.
So you get things cheap, or would you exchange goods
for? I exchanged goods for them.
What did they want?
I had cigarettes, and people sent me coffee from London. Cigarettes was no problem. I didn't smoke. At one stage, I was in charge of an affy, but I didn't take advantage of it. I didn't smoke. Well, the beginning of the invasion, we got cut off for about a week from the supplies coming in from the sea, because it was so rough. And I kept the unit going with some of the cigarettes I got stored up. I had so many cigarettes, I gave them a few cigarettes a day, everybody, and kept them going until the supplies started arriving again.
You haven't mentioned this naffy job before. Well, what was that?
They gave me the job of running the naffy as well when the beginning of the invasion.
Tell us about it. I mean, what did you actually have to do?
Order the supplies, and they came in. You had a set order, but we were allowed. And the supplies came in, and each day I just get all the stuff. Until eventually that stopped.
I was in 44 anyway. Now tell me, how were you demobilised?
How was I demobilised? I was in Berlin.
That'd be 1946 you were
demobilised. 1947.
No, right up to 47, right?
1947, March.
And what happened?
I was sent to a depot. And then from there, we crossed over by boat, and then eventually I got to London, to a big warehouse, and they took you around the warehouse and gave you so many pairs of socks and shoes and a suit for the demobilisation, and I think it wasn't a lot of money, I can't remember, I got a bit of money I think, and that was March 1947.
Now, what were you going to do? You'd been a clerk, but you were now more a professional musician. What did you do? Tell us about your career.
Something happened, which absolutely... several things happened as far as fate was concerned. I had some lucky escapes, first of all in France. When I was first landed... Oh, I'll tell you something else. When I first landed, the next field to us were 25-pounders. And they were firing at the Germans, and we watched them by a ditch, and all of a sudden we saw a shell come out of a gun like this. Boom. In other words, you never see a shell land come out of a gun. You hear a puff of smoke. You see a puff of smoke, and then you hear a bang. But this one came out of the gun, boom, into the ground. So, of course, we flung ourselves into the ditch. Oh, God, this is the end. And the gunners must have gone green. But it was a dodge, it didn't go off. And another thing happened when I was in the beginning of the invasion. I hadn't been there about a day or 2 days. A man come puffing up to me, he said, "Here, mate, you're a musician. Is this any good?" And he showed me what looked like an instrument. You couldn't see because it was all covered in mud. I said, I'll have a look at it tonight, I'll let you know. It was bone dry, the mud. I scrapped it all off. And it was a clarinet. So I took it to pieces. I cleaned it. I greased it. Put it back again. And tried it. And it worked beautifully. So I said to him, it's a clarinet. So he said, it must be worth a fiver. I haven't got a fiver. What are you talking about? I'll give you £2. He said, God, it's worth more than £2. I said, look, I'll give you £3, and that's all I've got. And you might as well take it, because when eventually we do break out and you get a chance to go to a French establishment, you've got all that's a lot of money to go and have a booze up. Yeah, I suppose you're right. So I gave him £3, took the clarinet. I wouldn't mind a pound how many broadcasts I've done with it. I still got it in the cupboard if you want to see it. You want to see it?
Not just now, because, I mean, they can't see it. So you were telling me about what you did.
So now my intention was I wanted to go to America. I was going to get in touch with this producer. I was going to go to America, form a band, and try and become a famous band leader. That was my ambition. And it went up the creek.
What happened? What went wrong?
I was on leave, ordinary leave, and I decided, it was the last night of my leave, I was going back on Monday. So Saturday night I'm going to a dance, and that's it. So Saturday night I'm going to a dance. So I get to Northwold Road, the bus stop, to go to the West End. And it started raining, and it poured, and it pelted. And when the bus finally came along, I jumped on, changed my mind, I'm going to Stoke Newington Town Hall to a dance, because I don't want to get soaking wet. And there were a couple of girls on the bus, I didn't notice them, and we all went into the town hall. One of them I didn't know at the time was engaged, and the other one was okay. So I spotted them in the hall, so I went over, the one was plain one and one pretty one. So I went to the pretty one, have a dance. She said, I'm not much of a dancer. I said, well, never mind, we tried. So we did. And the other one, she said, my cousin, and she's a good dancer. So I danced with her. And she didn't stop talking the whole time, that one. So I asked again, and eventually I said, can I sit with you? I said, yeah, all right. So I took them home eventually. And when I took them home, I took the ordinary one home first, and I took the pretty one around the corner. And I said to her, I'd like to take you out again. She said, yeah. I said, how about tomorrow, Sunday? But I can only afford to go to the Regent Stanford Hill because I haven't got much money. I'm going back to my unit on Monday. But I can take you to the...
I thought you were demobilised. I'm losing things.
Sorry, here. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I jumped again. That's before I was demobilised. Sorry.
Because you were telling me how you didn't become a famous band leader. Is this how you met your wife? I think you've
Pushed
it onto that, yeah. Carry on then, finish the story off.
So I asked her if she could come out to local pictures. So she said, okay. She told her father, what's her time? She told her father, and he hated that she was engaged, and I didn't know that. And he hated this bloke, because he'd have borrowed money left, right, and centre to take her to the Dorchester store somewhere. Instead of which, I wouldn't do that. So he said, well, he's a nice little man, down to the earth. Okay. So we went. So then I said to her, I'm going back tomorrow to my unit, and I'll phone you when I get to Tilbury. I'll try, and I don't think I can do this, I'll try and phone you from Berlin. So I'll try. So that was it. And I phoned her from Tilbury. And when she told her father he's going to try and phone me from Berlin, said, oh, another big head. He's never going to do that. You couldn't get an international call in those days. The only people making international calls was the administrators of the occupation troops. So, and otherwise you didn't get a chance. Anyway, I spoke to my major, and he said, I'm sorry, I haven't got enough here for that. Go and see Colonel so-and-so. He said, I haven't got enough here for that. Go and see Brigadier General so-and-so. He's the head man of the whole area. So I went to see him and told him what I wanted. You can't make a phone call to London. I've never heard of anything like it. Ridiculous. I said, it's not quite ridiculous. I fall in love with this girl and I want to phone her and tell her. And that's the only way I can do it. You can't do that. I said, look, if you phone my commanding officer, he'll give me a good report of my work. And if you only got to listen to the radio, I'm often broadcasting on there for the troops and we entertain the troops. And if we get, we entertain them a different company, not ours, we don't get paid. The money goes to the division. Oh, all right. So he said, I've got Van Emden here. He wants to make a call to London. Can you arrange it? So he said, yes, you can get a 3-minute call, 2 weeks' time, so-and-so night, 7:30. Thank you. I had time to write home, and 7:30 came at the house. He said, see another big head. It went. 2 minutes later, the phone goes. Can you take an international phone call from Berlin? They were amazed. They were amazed and couldn't believe it. And I finished up. I married the girl, but she wouldn't go to America, no way. And I didn't particularly want to go to America and leave my parents with a married woman. For a single man, I was going to do it. I could do it backwards and forwards. But as a married man, I couldn't. So we had to change course.
So could you not have formed a band here, though?
I did. A very successful one. But that was another story.
So you didn't go back to working as a clerk, obviously?
Yes, I did. What happened was this. My wife, I was a professional musician. I'm working full time now. And I was seeing her about 5 hours a week. I was working in Ramsgate. She used to come down there. And she was very sharp. And I was a 7-piece band working as a musician to get myself going first. 7-piece band. And five of them were married. One was engaged and getting married very shortly. I was the only single one. So after a few weeks, I said to her one day, you know, I'm the fish and chip boy around here. What do you mean by that? Well, I can't get 7 portions of fish and chips, put 5, 6 in the oven, and I have my mine on my own. Oh, well, where do they all go when they finish work? And that's it. They finish work and they go to clubs. What do they do? So I told them we go to clubs and have a few drinks and then come.
We're just trying to get you to explain what happened to you after the war.
I asked my girlfriend to get engaged and to get married. And she, and because she realised the other men were having affairs during the week, instead of when they were married, she said she wouldn't marry me if I was a full-time professional musician and a band leader, because the better on I got, the better well-known I was, there's more temptation of the marriage going wrong, and she wouldn't have it. She said, you're a very good administrator, I know. Do the administration and go out and play 2 or 3 nights a week if you want to. And then we can get married. But otherwise, I'm not going to get married. And I was faced with a decision. I had to either marry her, which I loved her and wanted to, or keep on as a professional musician. So I did what she wanted. It lasted 40 years.
So you worked you went back to work as what?
I went back, well, first died off, my brother-in-law had a factory. And he got me a job as a foreman in the factory, checking things and saying everything was right, which I did. But after that, I went to another firm as an administrator. And when that was going to go wrong and I could see it, I got a job, a big advert in a paper for a senior administrator at Islington Town Hall, doing a lot of things I could do. And I loved the idea and I applied for it and I got a job.
And you were a semi-pro musician?
Yes.
And you carried on working as a musician?
The band I had was up to a top class professional standard. For the type of work I was doing, it had to be. But I didn't do it full time. I didn't do it. I was one of the best bands in the country. It had to be. For 17 years I worked with a top toastmaster called Ivor Spencer. I worked with him for nearly 17 years and we were doing all big functions in the West End. Savoy Daughters took over the house, you name them, we played them. And the only snag about the whole lot was you had to do cabarets always. You played for a cabaret and you had to play it on sight. You had to sight read the parts. You couldn't rehearse it unless you played for a famous person. You played for someone like Lena Martell or Tommy Cooper or someone like that, then you could get a rehearsal. Otherwise, you didn't get a rehearsal. So you had to be able to sight read. And if you could do that, it was fine. And I just kept my drummer and the pianist, who was always with the show, the musical director, and I played with them, and we did that for 17 years. The only reason I packed it in was the IRA started bombing up the West End, 1978, the end of 78 into 79. The first start of it was, I was walking towards the Savoy one night, past the old Richard Trick, bang, I knew it was a bomb immediately. And the following morning it turned out it was a terrorist, and the bomb had gone off before it should have done. He was on an empty bus, he got killed, and that was the first start. And after that, they started, and nobody wanted to go to the West End to get bombed. So they did. My wife was going mad. I said, don't get worried, because I'm not going. And it's all been taken out of the area.
So that's when you stopped working.
And then I stopped playing. I stopped playing. I packed the band up, and I just carried on playing these sort of things, going around to the different homes, playing for the old people at my own expense.
Thank you very much.